Welcome into Game Night. Ryan Porth here with Harry Zolnarchuk, former Predators forward for a couple of different stints, but mostly known for the 2017 playoff run and his big goal in Chicago in Game 2 of that series, also known as Harry Z by some people. So let's start that way, Harry. Do you like going by Harry Z or the official name of Harry Zolnarchuk?
You know, I mean, let's be honest, Harry Z is a lot more simpler for many people out there. So, I mean, that actually started when I was playing for Lavi in Philadelphia, where I first signed out of college. And to be honest, I'm not sure who actually started, if it was Lavi or if it was even Derek Settlemyer Nasty, the equipment manager there at in Philly. I think it might have been behind him that started the Harry Z. Something to simplify that name. That was a mouthful for a lot of people. So Harry Z started there. It's been the name that's traveled with me throughout the hockey career.
Well, good deal. It has a good ring to it, Harry Z. And a lot of media members called you the Z Factor. That playoff run instead of the X Factor. Also, did you know that you could win 38 points in Scrabble with your last name? I just found that out just a few minutes ago.
I have heard that. That's come up a couple times. People have made me well aware of that Scrabble point there. Yeah.
So before we get into the 2017 run for that Nashville Predators team, what are you doing now?
Yeah. So actually last year, last hockey season, not the one that just kind of ended abruptly, but I was with Florida's farm team down in Springfield. And after that season, I actually decided to retire or step away from the game. I ended up moving my family and I back to Toronto, my hometown in Etobicoke here. And we were setting up shop here and just recently started to get into the tech world, the tech industry, and found my way a part of the company Shopify. I'm not sure if people are super familiar with it, but just kind of something completely different. You know, I'm not sure if it's a lifelong play or what it is, but I was definitely looking to change things up as I felt that the window to the NHL was basically closed. And I knew once that happened, that it was time to move on. So definitely look into the business world right now. It's starting in tech and we'll see where it ends up.
Well, continued success in your post hockey career. Do you want to end up in hockey again someday, either in a front office or coaching role?
You know, I've always thought about it. I think it's, you know, it'll be, I'm not sure when and where I'll come back. I think at some point I will and want to be a part of it somewhere. But I mean, I think I would love that. I think for me, it was the thought of getting into that. If it was coaching, you know, where do you start in coaching? Are you back into the minors again? And, you know, is it starting in the East Coast somewhere or the A? And I dragged my wife and our first son around a little bit, and we were expecting our second, which we had here in Canada. I think it was time we had to settle down a little bit and quit the double move in a season. I think my wife was excited to see the travel stop, although we missed it because it took us to a lot of great places. But we needed a little normalcy in our life at that point, and that's kind of a big reason of the change.
Where would Nashville rank among the different cities you've played in?
Oof, I think it's, to be honest, it's probably, in terms of living, it's probably number two, and it's right behind San Diego. I played, I spent a year with Anaheim and spent some time in San Diego. I was able to, I was living in La Jolla, which is a great little spot right over our place was looking over the Wind and Sea Beach there, which is a famous little surf spot. That place, you know, blew us away. But to be honest, Nashville, I would say it was probably number two in terms of living. Hockey-wise, throughout my career, number one for sure.
Good deal. Well, everyone enjoyed your time with the Nashville Predators. And anytime that the name Harry Z or Harry Zolnarchuk or the Z Factor comes up, everyone remembers that game two against the Chicago Blackhawks in the first round of the 2017 playoffs, where you scored a big goal in that game to make it 2-0. How vivid of a memory do you have of that goal that you scored in that game?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, probably, you know, the biggest goal of my career, of my life. It's something I won't forget, you know, for sure, of spending limited time in the playoffs and having, you know, memories like that, that's one that I will not lose track of or ever forget. That's for sure.
Well, some of us at the station, we were traveling with you guys, and myself and Darren McFarland were in the press box for that game in the United Center, as well as all the road games, and sitting right next to each other. When you scored that goal, I think I still have a bruise on my arm from when Darren punched me in the shoulder. Because it was, you know, no offense, but it was so unexpected that would happen. And that right then and there, we both looked at each other and said, you know what? I think this team is special. There's something different about this team than other Nashville Predators teams. When did you guys know that something was special in the room?
You know, it really was towards the end of the season and leading into the playoffs and obviously that last push, that drive to get into the playoffs. You know, the cliche is it's not, you know, how you start, it's how you finish, obviously. But it takes, you know, it takes a long time for the team to really gel and find its place, find its purpose, find its identity, I guess you'd say. And, you know, obviously there are some big trades and some big pickups towards the end that really finished, you know, building that character and that makeup of the team. And to be honest, heading into playoffs, I think we just knew. I can definitely, you know, speaking for myself, and I think I'd speak for a lot of the guys, that team was different and it had a different feeling. I've played on a lot of teams and bounced around a lot in my career. You know, for whatever reason, just that makeup was so perfect of the guys from character top to bottom, the leadership to the young guys and everywhere in between coaching. It just was a different feeling and a feeling that we knew we were just going to keep marching. And it started, you know, it really did. It started in Chicago. I still remember the first meeting and it was, you know, nobody, I think there was one reporter out of, I don't know how many had picked Nashville to win. It was a landslide and the line was that we were going to dismantle Chicago and nobody, you know, batted an eye that it was out of reach. And we went in and did that, which was, you know, unbelievable and turned a lot of heads. And then from there on, you know, we were cruising along with all the injuries and everything we faced. I mean, there was something different in that locker room that allowed us to get as far as we did.
Well, after the morning skate on the morning of game one, to bring Darren into the conversation again, Darren and I kind of looked at each other saying, there's something weird here that like, there's a focus level that's either like a great thing or it was a vibe that we had not gotten from that room all season long. And as it turned out, you guys were zeroed in. And Ryan Johansson said this for our Game 6 Remastered feature that we just aired today, that Chicago was the hump that team had to get over and that you guys treated it like it was the Stanley Cup final. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, we geared up for that series coming in against all odds, you know, where everyone else had put us. We knew what we had in that locker room. Like I said, I mean, it wasn't like we need to push this, you know, to seven or we need to like, our plan was we're going in to dismantle Chicago. That was kind of the MO that we had there. We followed it right to a T, to a point where they, you know, they were obviously flustered and couldn't believe what was going on. But we geared up. We knew that was obviously our big hurdle to overcome, at least to get us, you know, to get moving and gain some traction. And when we did that, I mean, like I said, against all the turbulence that we ran into, we're still able to find a way to keep pulling through from the next series to the next and getting us right there to the finals.
Well, you mentioned how only one of however many writers picked you guys to win that series against the Hawks. A lot of local media did not want to see Nashville versus Chicago in the first round because they thought it was going to be a doomsday scenario for the Nashville Predators as it had been in previous postseasons. But you guys were really confident that you could beat that team. Why?
You know, I think in it, obviously, like, you know, I'm sure the, you know, media in Nashville and the across the entire, you know, across the entire league, that's not the team you want to run into. I mean, they were a dynasty team, and they still had all the pieces from that for the most part. You know, the reputation they carry is daunting, and running into them as the bottom seed against the top seed. Yeah. Like that's not a matchup you want to, you know, look into. But I think, again, we break down their team and the players they had. And I think when we lined it up and we put our game plan in place, you know, we had so much belief that we could follow it to the point where it would, you know, as I've used it before, dismantle them. It's what happened. I mean, it really was just a belief. And, you know, you said you had that feeling and others had that feeling. It's not something you can draft or pick. It really, you know, I shouldn't say pick. It's not something you can draft. It's just, you know, a combination of everything coming together and figuring out that you have the right pieces and it's all working, you know, and moving in the right direction. And that's really what we had in Nashville that year.
So you use the word dismantle. I'll use Ryan Johansson's word that you guys steamrolled Chicago in game two.
Yeah.
You know, once you scored that goal to make it 2-0, then it became 3-0, then it became 4-0. And then the boos in United Center. I mean, talk about turning the tables. The national anthem that night was the loudest building I may have ever heard on a Saturday night in Chicago, NBC. It was deafening in there. And then just a few hours later, they're booing the Blackhawks off the ice. What did that series as a whole do for that team in terms of a confidence level that you could play with anybody and you could beat anybody?
And really just that. I mean, that's exactly what it did. You know, you put a game plan in place. I've been on teams where you're going into a game or you're going into a playoff series and, you know, you have something in place and you're still second guessing what's going on. It's like, oh, I don't know if, you know, this sounds good. This looks good. I don't know if it's going to hold up. Do we stand a chance kind of thing? And, you know, there wasn't even an ounce of that, to be honest. And so when we were able, you know, and it probably couldn't have worked out any better that it, and as Joey said, we steamrolled them to the, you know, to sweeping them, you know, I think it just helped, you know, us understand that the plan we had in place was perfect for our team and for our style to keep moving forward. And the fact that it worked that well for us in round one just really built us, you know, up the confidence and, you know, all of that to keep us charging forward and, you know, into St. Louis, into Anaheim, and then, you know, obviously to Pittsburgh. But yeah, I mean, that first series is the big one. I mean, that's where you either, it can quickly end or you can quickly build a ton of momentum that takes you to, you know, a different level. And that's basically what happened with Nashville. We just kept finding a new level of, you know, brothership. And by the time that thing you're getting to the end, I mean, you're as close as you can imagine. And it's an amazing ride.
So the season prior, the postseason prior, the Preds won the first two games on the road in Anaheim, came back and squandered that 2-0 series lead and had to go back out to Anaheim with the series tied 2-2. So I think the fan base in Nashville was cautiously optimistic after those first two games in Chicago. But I felt like it found a new level in this city when you guys won that overtime game with Kevin Fiala scoring dramatic fashion. You come back from down 2-0 in that game to win. It felt like this city in that moment wrapped its arms around you guys. Did you feel that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was like almost each game, you know, another game. I think that was a huge point for us. I mean, just you talking about it, you get the shivers, the feels, you know, the good feels or something like that. But, you know, that was a staple point in that series specifically, where it was like, you know, they were defeated at that point. You know, they really were. I mean, that was their chance to bring the series back around. Us coming back, Fiala winning it, you know, that was it. And then, yeah, I mean, the city, I've never been anywhere where I've seen the transformation. Not that they weren't that passionate, excuse me, that lively during the season. I mean, we had great fans, great support, but you know, you ask any fan, any player, that city transformed, that downtown transformed into something I've never seen. It was incredible. And I think you're right. I think that was, I guess I never thought about when it really hit us. I think that definitely was a point where, you know, everyone, including the fans, media, you know, realized this was for real. There's, you know, we're going to get out of this first round and we're going to start making some noise. And the fans came on board, and you know, not that they weren't on board to begin with, but, and they made a lot of noise too. So it was, it was pretty cool.
Well, maybe another word to use after that game three is the word belief. It mm-hmm. when you guys came back in the style that you did, you guys started believing, as our cat here is invading on this Facebook Live. But, you know, we talk about the city, and it was very evident that you guys knew everything that was going on in this city. But I feel like it can be harder than it can be said to stay focused on the task at hand while also taking in everything inside the arena, outside the arena. How were you guys able to, you know, enjoy everything that was going on, but also stay laser focused on the task at hand?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, that comes with playing pro hockey, you know, playing a pro sport, of being able to, not to turn that switch on and off, or I guess the ability to turn it on and off when you leave the rink, be able to step away. And when you come back, you're back into that. But, you know, I don't know if it was so much a distraction for us. It almost like it was just became a part of us, you know, like that almost became a part of our identity. You know, people coming in, this is crazy. The way their fans are treating us and yelling at us and cheering during the game, you know, people are calling it a college game on steroids, the way they were screaming and things, you know, we embraced it. We loved it. And I don't think it wasn't a distraction. It just became a part of our identity and something that it's like, you know, they were kind of with us. And I don't know. I don't really know how else to explain it other than that it didn't feel like a distraction. It was, you know, with us and supporting us the entire way, which was pretty cool.
So Colton Sissons admitted to Darren McFarland for this Game 6 remastered piece that you guys were talking in the mornings of home games of who was going to sing the anthem and almost debating who should be the anthem singer or the hype man or the rally towel waver with all that pomp and stance around the arena. Is that true? Was that a big discussion?
You would think that we would have an inside scoop of who was going, and I'll be honest, there was you know, the games I wasn't playing when I was in and out. If I was out, you know, we were sneaking down, you know, as we were heading over, let's catch a glimpse. Let's see if we can break the spoiler. Like, who's coming out tonight? So yeah, I mean, that was something we were all, you know, gearing up for. And like I said, that was, it wasn't a distraction. Like, it was something that people were just excited about, who we bring in next, who's propelling us to the, you know, that next level. And yeah, it was, that was a pretty cool moment for players, fans, people. You know, I can't imagine how many people were tuning in, whether they were in Nashville or, you know, whoever we were playing fan, they probably just wanted to check in to see who was doing the anthem in Nashville that night. So it was, yeah, like I said, it just kind of all came together and made it pretty, pretty special.
Yeah. I know NBC Sports Network and National NBC games on that channel, they would always show the anthem. It became kind of a subplot to that entire run.
Yeah, you have to. You got some of the, you know, the most famous people in the world, country artists, coming out there and hitting us with the anthem and getting us going. I mean, that wasn't a Nashville or, you know, that thing that was talked about, you know, across, you know, I don't want to say the world, but definitely North America, definitely across the NHL. I mean, you were tuning in, whether you liked hockey or not, you were tuning in to see who was getting a free show for the anthem.
Yeah, for sure. But so, not to gloss over the St. Louis series, that was a rough and tumble series. Mm-hmm. You guys win that in six games. We're doing a lot of reflection this week over the Anaheim series because game five, the 3-year anniversary, was 2 days ago. And then Today is the anniversary of game six. What would be the one word that you would use to describe that series?
Oh, anxiety. I had anxiety going through that No, you know, I don't know. There's so many you could choose. I mean, it was a roller coaster. It was emotional. Honestly, you know, there's so many different words that fit that series and wouldn't encompass what that, you know, a battle. That was a war. You know, I think if I could really put one, it was a war. It was a nasty war. I think that's the best way to describe it. I mean, aside from all the ups and downs for both teams, I mean, just, it was a flat out war, and people that were watching were like, I think the reffing's, you know, done. Like, it was almost went back to a little bit of the old school hockey, as close as you can get, you know, to this day and age with the way the new rules are. You know, cause obviously when the Pittsburgh series kicked off, it was like, whoa, things were different all of a sudden, you know, that, you know, prison game that we were playing, seemed like it was a little different, but yeah, I guess I'd say a war. It was a war.
That's funny you use that word, because David Poile, Ryan Johansson, Colton Sissons, and Austin Watson all use that word to describe that series, during our feature today.
Yeah, no, it really was. If you think, yeah, just the games alone. Absolutely.
And you mentioned the old school hockey, and that old school hockey prompted Ryan Johansson after game two to call out Ryan Kesler. So all of a sudden you have this Preds Ducks rivalry that has brewed up over the years, and it goes from here to here.
Oh yeah.
With those comments, how aware were you guys of how, like, the gravity of those comments and how it just kind of became a big thing in that series?
Yeah. And that here to that, that's not big enough. You meant like the screen, you can't even hit it to where that thing went. And I mean, that's just, you know, and that's playoff hockey. That's the passion. That's the, you know, that's what goes into it. And it's, you know, it was a war, and it was, you know, there was no holding back. I mean, things got nasty, things got ugly, and it, you know, if anything, I know it brought them closer together. It brought us a lot closer together, as you know, if we could get any closer. And it was, you know, it was definitely the toughest series of all four, without a doubt. Obviously, you know, not winning it is the tough, but in terms of physicality and that old school hockey, I mean, that was it right there. That was something to watch.
Was there any panic within that locker room when Ryan Johansson goes down, Mike Fisher goes down, you're flying out to Anaheim without your top two centers? Was there any panic in that room?
Right. Like, we don't have Fiala, and Fiala might've been, you know, one of our, he was feeling it going into the playoffs. He kind of, you know, came into this groove of almost our most, you know, I don't know, you know, I don't want to say offensive guy, because we had some, he's still, you know, but I don't know. He found a groove that it was like, whoa, this guy looks like he's you know, a veteran kind of thing, and scoring big goals for us, and was just all, you know, all over the ice. So, you know, first it was him, and then Joey, and then Fish. And, you know, I think to say, was there any panic? I mean, I'm not sure if panic was there, but, you know, definitely losing a little air in your, you know, in your tire, in your confidence and belief. I mean, it definitely pokes at it a bit. I mean, you can't lose three players like that, especially Fish, especially Joey, you know, as you mentioned, the top two centers, and not, you know, for a second question. I think the best thing we did was just stay on track, and that had to come obviously from the coaching all the way down through the, you know, still the leadership of Joey and obviously Fish of still staying the course. And I think that's where the, you know, the tightness of our group, that brothership that we had, that feeling that you don't always get in a lot of teams, that's where that started to shine through for us, and was still a big, you know, I can't imagine anybody put any money on us to win and finish off that series, as we started losing all those guys, especially those three forwards. And, you know, there was just a different belief in our room that maybe no one else could see, that we, you know, we knew we could still do it. And we did.
So when I look back on that 2017 run, I think of three C's. I think of confidence that you guys played with. I think of cohesion that you guys had. And I think of the word clutch, that when the chips were on the table, someone, whether it was a top player or a role player, made a play to win the game. Let's start with confidence. How did Peter Laviolette instill confidence within you guys that you guys could beat anybody?
Yeah, you know, and I was fortunate enough to play for Lavi twice in both Philly and Nashville. And I would say that, you know, he is an unbelievable coach in terms of motivation. And we're just speaking to that part alone, you know, never mind the rest of his coaching ability. But the way he keeps it, you know, fresh and you know, different ideas and just things outside the box to really, you know, help bring us together or give us, you know, some type of jam or you know, juice or something to get us going. I mean, he is unbelievable at that. And that's something I always enjoyed playing for him because of that reason. There was always, whether it was a regular season game or playoff series, he found a way to shine a different light over it that really just drove everybody in the right direction in a fun and passionate way. And, you know, I think a lot of that stems obviously, you know, right from him and then trickling right through us, you know, it's infectious at that point. And that was, that starts with him for sure.
So the cohesiveness that you guys played with, you used the word brotherhood a little bit earlier. Is that such a cohesive unit that team that you like, are you guys still like friends and talking all the time? Is that one of those groups of teammates that you're going to stay in touch with for a long time?
Absolutely. And still do to, you know, even stepping away from it now, you know, guys, there's some group chats that pop up every once in a while from it, or, you know, even anything through social media. I mean, it's, you know, I was back for, I was there when for Beteto's wedding and all the guys were there, you know, I mean, just, yeah, that it's, you know, it's like I said, you can build a team and have the right character of guys and think you have the right group. And for whatever reason, they might, you know, they just, you know, they might gel, they might mesh, but, you know, do they get to that level? And, you know, for whatever reason, all the right pieces were there and we found a way to become extremely close and, you know, something that you just don't always get regardless of how good and how great the guys are. It was, it's a different feeling.
Well, that definitely shined through big time, especially when I use the word clutch. You guys had big plays. Cody McLeod scores a game-winning goal against St. Louis. Vern Fiddler scores a game-winning goal. You had a monster goal in that Chicago series that really took the air out of United Center. All these different players from different backgrounds that may not have started in Nashville that season. They may have started in the minor leagues or another team, and they all flocked to this room, and there's Vern Fiddler poking it in St. Louis to win that game.
Absolutely. And then, Freddie Gaudreau.
I mean, the only two game-winning goals in Stanley Cup final history in the Nashville Predators, Freddie Gaudreau.
Amazing. I know. Unbelievable. Still talk to him. Great guy. Yeah. I mean, you know, it was, like I said, it was just the makeup we had and, you know, the coaching staff we really felt that we were building four lines that could play with anybody. I mean, that was, you know, and maybe that was a bit of a different point where you might have, you really load up on a couple top lines. And I think, you know, for the most part, we tried to build four that we could roll and for the most, you know, for most times throughout the game. And I think that was a big piece. And yeah, I mean, it was, guys were just able to step up. And when games are tight like that, I mean, they can really go any way and you need somebody to step up and, you know, come through in a big moment. And, you know, we were fortunate enough to have enough of those moments to get us as far as we did.
So one name that I didn't mention was Pontus Aubergh. And I'm going to attempt something that I haven't done on Facebook yet, and that is on Facebook Live, and that is do a screen share. So I hope this works. Can you see Pontus Aubergh here?
Yeah.
All right. So quick story about this photo. So you guys, you know, we fly out to Anaheim for game five, and we find out on that flight what happened with Joey. So the next day, the game is like an early evening start, maybe 4 or 5 Pacific time. There's no morning skate. So there's a pregame availability for media, you know, 2 hours before puck drop.
Okay.
And the three guys who were in the media room were Matias Ekholm, I believe Ryan Ellis, and Pontus Åberg.
Yeah.
Here's Pontus Åberg before game 5, sitting at the podium, Western Conference Final, is not asked one question. He looks bored sitting there.
Yeah.
And then
unbelievable.
And then just a few hours later, he scores that goal and perhaps the most important goal of that entire playoff run, because that set up game 6 to be able to win that.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think that goes to the point that we just had everybody chipping in. And I think, you know, that's what you need to ultimately win. You know, obviously, did we fall short? Yes. But when you look at teams like Pittsburgh and teams that have won it recently, you get that contribution from everyone. It really just isn't a lift from one guy or one line. You really need that entire team and the feeling that anybody can contribute and help and come through at a big moment. And those were the pieces we had and all the names you've mentioned, and then ending there with Åberg. I mean, everybody, you know, came through at some point to help us move us along, which was pretty cool.
I know you did not dress in that game 6 against the Ducks, but what was that locker room celebration like afterwards?
Unbelievable. And I think when you asked me the one word, I think maybe that's why I said anxiety, because of having to watch some of those games, you know, the ones you're in the war and then you're out and it's, you know, that the roller coaster, there was the anxiety there. But yeah, I mean, when we won that game, you know, the celebration was, yeah, it was unbelievable. I mean, I can't describe, like, you know, there's no describing what that feeling was like, what the celebration was like. It's pure joy at its fullest. And a feeling I definitely will never forget as well.
So where did you watch game 6?
We were all over. We were up, down. I mean, that's what I mean. That's the anxiety. We're moving around. I mean, you're not sitting down. You're starting up top. You're down. You're getting a workout in. You're watching a little underneath, a little up top, back down. You know, tightening up the tie, taking the tie off. I mean, it's crazy. It's different when you're playing and then to when you're not playing and not able to contribute or have any, you know, impact on the game. I mean, you are just, you're watching it with, you know, the feeling of your life on the line and you're sweating the whole time.
So you guys had a deep roster that that spring, and I assume Peter Laviolette had a lot of tough coaching decisions, lineup decisions going into each either game or series. What level of understanding was there within the room of, you know what, if it's okay if I don't go, because that's what's best. I trust Peter that he's putting out the best lineup.
Honestly, that's the answer. That's exact what you said is exactly, you know, how it was. And again, that's part of the makeup of that team. That's, you know, very rarely are you in a situation when you have that many guys that can be cycled in and out. And regardless of who's in, you don't lose those guys or they're kind of off on their own page to the point where they kind of bring, you know, a negative energy around the room or the team or the direction, you know, we wanted to go. I mean, and I've been on plenty of teams where that is the case. You know, the guy that's out is miserable and not, you know, doesn't want to accept it. And let's be honest, I mean, you don't want to be out. You never want to be the guy that's out, but it was just a different feeling and a part of that team that if you weren't in, you knew, you know, it was for the right reason, or we thought it gave us the best chance to win that specific game. And that was, you know, that was it. I mean, for me personally, it's, you know, being a role player is, you know, something that I had to find out quickly was the way that I was going to survive. And so, you know, I was, I was going to do whatever I had to do to bring a positive vibe to that room, whether I was in it or not. And I'd say that's been my game plan ever since I started getting into the league.
So who were the guys in the locker room that kept things loose during that run? Who were the
There were a handful of, you know, Tony and I, Big T and I were definitely, you know, James Neal, we were in there. We'd always be busting him up. Subes, Fiddlesticks, Big Vern Fiddler, Cody McLeod, Joey. I mean, even on the back end, Yossi. And I mean, we just had such a good makeup. It wasn't like anyone, you know, it just, that's, you know, it's one of those things that everyone, it just, it blended that well. And everybody kind of had their role and brought all the pieces that needed to make sure things were light and serious when they had to be. And yeah, I mean, I was definitely one of the guys always trying to keep things light and, you know, remove a little tension or a little, you know, any of the nerves that might be creeping in at times, but I mean, a lot of guys did. But definitely Big T and I, we were in there trying to keep things loose and keep the guys grooving. So we had a ton of fun doing that as well.
So one of the memories I have of some of the flights that we were on, you know, to Chicago, St. Louis, Anaheim, is how much Peter Laviolette would mingle with the guys and just go up and down and, you know, just kind of check in with everybody. How much of a player's coach was Peter Laviolette for that group and, you know, is as a coach just in general?
Yeah, I mean, big time. Always involved with the guys, always involved with the players. And there has to be a fine line, you know, and I think he was able to walk that really well throughout his entire career. You know, that was obviously a big reason I really enjoyed playing for him. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a hard thing. I've never been in that position as a coach and to, you know, manage players from both sides of being a player's coach and someone that, you know, keeps themselves away from the dressing room. I've had both, you know, coaches that stick to one side, but Lavi was able to walk that line of being on both sides. And, you know, I think it ultimately earned him a lot of respect throughout his entire career. And he found a way to truly master it and be exceptional at it. And so I think that, and it was a big reason that, you know, we were who we were in the makeup of that team.
So you played with Lavi in Philadelphia and you would have been there the season that you guys played in the Winter Classic, correct?
Correct. Yes.
All right. So he made a lot of headlines during the HBO behind the scenes of different, you know, intermission rants. Yeah. Were you there when, I know there's one where on HBO where he called out Hartsey and, you know, he was challenging you guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember those intermission speeches or pregame speeches?
Yeah, absolutely. I was fortunate enough. That was my rookie year. I was fortunate enough to, you know, I was called up, sent down, called up. And then I was a part of that entire HBO, you know, scene and road to the Winter Classic, which was, you know, an unbelievable experience. And anyways, yeah, getting back to, I mean, that just comes, I mean, Lavi's passionate. That's, you know, that there's not another word to describe Lavi other than absolutely passionate in everything he does. And, you know, he demanded, you know, the absolute best from every guy. Didn't matter if that game was at noon, you know, if it was a matinee game, whatever it was. I mean, he just expected the best and he, you know, prepared us in a way that he felt that we should be able to deliver that. And if we weren't, I mean, he was the first to let you know and wouldn't sugarcoat it. I mean, it was, he would call it as it is. So that was, you know, that was part of his makeup and what made him, you know, as successful as he's been.
So we used to have, I think this was the Eric Nystrom show that Peter Laviolette was a guest on. So it was one of the best player shows that we've ever had with 102.5 The Game was when Peter Laviolette was Nystrom's guest. And he told this story of, and I don't know if this was in Carolina or Philadelphia, but he told this story of during an intermission, he was mad at the team and he was not happy with how you guys were playing, whether it was you guys or Carolina.
Whatever. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he said he came in to the locker room in intermission and he had already chewed out the team multiple times in previous weeks. So all he did was stare at a Gatorade bottle and just chew out the Gatorade bottle for looking at him wrong, for doing all the wrong things during that period.
Okay,
you know, yeah. The Gatorade bottle was lazy. You know, he wasn't skating hard, yada, yada. Do you remember any specific, you know, funny intermission speeches that he gave to you guys, whether it be in Philadelphia or Nashville?
You know, I don't know if I have any off the top of my head. I wasn't around for the Gatorade one. That one sounds pretty epic. you know, whether it was intermission or pregame, you know, he always had, you know, a ton of passion, and he had, like I said, he always had, these out of the box ideas to keep us motivated and challenging us. And, you know, I mean, he did some awesome stuff, and I think, you know, it just, guys loved it. You know, guys found a way to really eat that stuff up. And I mean, yeah, I mean, it really just stems from all the passion that he really has.
So what was he the biggest reason why you ended up in Nashville?
You know, I mean, after playing in Philly for Lavi, I mean, he was, you know, obviously my first NHL coach and someone that saw, that had some faith to give me the opportunity to play. The career didn't really keep moving forward after, you know, I was traded from Philly. And as things were, you know, the window was almost, you know, done, was almost shut on me. I spoke to Lavi and Cato over the summer, and, you know, he was just really upfront and honest about where they were at with their team and the pieces they had. And, you know, guys had done a great job the year before of earning places on the team, you know, for the upcoming year. But to be honest, you know, he just said, we really don't have any other replacements at that point, any veteran replacements that we can, you know, rely on. And we're, you know, we're not looking to rebuild. We're looking to come in. And I just felt that given, you know, the history that I had with Lavi, that if there was going to be another shot, that, you know, he had seen me play and I'd played for him, you know, enough that it would hopefully be there again. And so I was, you know, luckily enough, I signed there and it, you know, it ended up working out. My NHL career definitely came back around for another blast, and it led to one of the best seasons of my life and one that I'm super grateful for.
What do you remember most? Let me rephrase it this way. What's going to be your lasting memory of that spring in 2017?
You know, I mean, to be honest, it's probably the guys. It's probably the group of guys. I mean, it was just, we've said it over and over here. It's like you said, like, you still talk to those guys. The makeup, it was, you know, obviously if we won, I couldn't even imagine what would have happened to Nashville and the city. But, you know, our group had become so tight and so close that, like I said, I mean, we saw the worst result, but it didn't matter. I mean, the bonds and the relationships that we had formed are, you know, we'll have for a lifetime. And, you know, it's unfortunate it didn't end the way we were dreaming it to, but, yeah, I mean, I look back and I just think of the guys on that team and the friendships I still have. And yeah, I think that would be it.
So if you have time for just one or two more.
Sure.
So changing the subject completely, the news came out today that Alabama Huntsville, their men's ice hockey program, is going away.
Yep.
As a result to
COVID. And I didn't know that.
And they may not be the only one through this period that happens to. You played college hockey in the Ivy League at Brown, correct?
Sure, yes. Yeah.
So as someone who played college hockey, how much does it hurt you inside to hear that about UAH and that could only be the first domino through this process with college hockey?
It's honestly, you know, you just, yeah, I mean, my stomach kind of sinks for those guys right now and for whatever, you know, comes next with other teams. College hockey was, I mean, it was incredible, and by no means were we successful at Brown, but, you know, you talk about forming a brotherhood with guys. It's some of the closest, you know, relationships I still have today, you know, that we're speaking constantly. you know, I don't know. It's just, you know, pro, there's such a difference between pro hockey and college hockey. I mean, you're there for 4 years, you're with the same guy for 4 years, same guys. You know, hockey can flip on a dime. And I guess that was more the case for me. I'm sure guys that, that spend a lot more time in an organization get to develop some of those friendships. But, you know, I bounced around a ton, and I think you do, you know, you really do everything together in college hockey. You know, you guys, the guys are waking up, you're doing breakfast together, your classes, practice, you go to the calf for a team meal, you're traveling. I mean, you do everything together. And I remember when I went to Adirondack after the season had ended, I went in for my first practice and practice ended. And then everybody just goes on to their, you know, their day. Like everyone has something going on. People had wives and kids and a couple groups. It's like, well, we don't hang out after practice, all 30 guys, you know? And I just, you know, I can't imagine. It was a, you know, a huge part of obviously being able to go to Brown and bonding with those guys. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't really have an answer for you other than that. It's, I couldn't imagine going to school and not having the hockey there and what, you know, it definitely helped me through that entire process. So I feel for those guys, and I feel for any school and team that's going to be, you know, forced to follow suit. I mean, it's unfortunate because it's a special part of going to college and being able to play a Division I sport.
Before you ever got to Brown, as someone from Toronto, what was your inspiration to play hockey?
You know, to be honest, I was, you know, like you grew up in Toronto as a hockey, you know, growing up as a, you know, a kid that loved hockey, playing hockey. I mean, your dream is to play in the NHL, and slowly, you know, obviously things, you know, you looked, you know, a little more, you know, kind of just ahead. And so college hockey was one, and then obviously playing pro. But, you know, for me, I wasn't a draft pick at any level. I was always kind of a late bloomer, I guess, you know, coming, you know, through my entire career. But I mean, it's just something, a dream that I always had. And did I think it was possible? No, there were plenty of times that I was almost forced to quit. I mean, I finished my last year of midget here. I tried to, I was accepted to the Western, University of Western Ontario for their business program. And, you know, I reached out to the hockey coach if I'd be able to try out. And I remember he flat out just said, no, not right now. Maybe, you know, play for a junior B team in the city, and you might have maybe your third or fourth year, we could get you to walk on and try out. But, you know, so then that was a big decision, and I ended up going out west to the BCHL, which was, you know, kept hockey alive. And then even, you know, finally getting to Brown, I didn't have many options in terms of college hockey. It was Brown or Alaska. Those were the two options that I had in terms of college hockey. So that was, you know, obviously thankful I picked Brown. And then even after my first 2 years of Brown, I mean, don't hockey DB those stats. My first 2 years of Brown, those are scary looking years. You know, things changed my junior, senior year with coaching staff and just a, you know, a bigger opportunity to play. And, you know, I mean, this could be a whole another conversation, this career on its own, but luckily I was able to sneak in the back door and sign as an unrestricted free agent with Philly, and found a way to grind out, you know, 8 years and of up and down. And obviously I wouldn't change anything about that. I don't have any regrets, and glad that I stuck with it.
Were you a Leafs fan growing up?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Always, always. I mean, that was, you know, I'd be going to the Leaf games with my dad and going into some of those playoff games against Ottawa. I mean, yeah, I loved hockey. Dougie Gilmore was my guy. That was the guy that I was always, you know, idolizing and following during all that. And yeah, I mean, it was, hockey was a lifelong dream, and I just very fortunate I was able to fulfill it and get to the NHL.
Did you rev Mike Fisher at all that he was with the Senators back in the day, yeah, when you were watching the Leafs play them in the playoffs, and now you're teammates with him?
No, I left that out. I left that out. No, Fisher's he's unbelievable. No, we kept that away. We kept that out of the room.
Good deal. Who's your favorite Leafs player?
Yeah, Lee, it would definitely Dougie Gilmore.
Dougie Gilmore, okay, yeah.
Yeah, Dougie Gilmore was my favorite. Him and Wendell Clark. But I remember when I was getting the jerseys, I was always getting the Dougie Gilmore jersey.
Good deal. Well, Harry Zolnerchuk has been our guest here on Game Night. Harry Z, the Z Factor, Harry Zolnerchuk, whatever Preds fans want to know you by. Thank you so much for spending your time here on a Friday evening to walk down memory lane of your time in Nashville and specifically that 2017 playoff run.
No, I appreciate you having me. That was a lot of fun. Given what's going on, it was nice to talk about something that was a special time in my life, and I know a special time for all of Nashville. So it was, like I said, it was awesome to be a part of it, and thanks for having me on here tonight.
Absolutely. Well, to everybody listening or watching, thank you for watching here this evening. Hope everyone has a fun and safe Memorial Day weekend. And we'll be back with you Tuesday evening for Game Night. ESPN's Jason Fitz will be joining Chase McCabe right here on our Facebook Live page. Until then, we'll talk to you on the other side of the holiday weekend.